welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Ray, welcome back. How are we doing?
Thank you, mate. All good, are you?
Yeah, good. Good, thank you. Yep. How's your week been?
Yeah, good. I've banned the word busy from my vocabulary. I actually want to ban it from my ears because it seems every conversation has to start there.
Yeah.
But that's not to say I've got lots of things going on. But because I like doing them, it's really, really helpful, you know. So, obviously, we're going to speak a lot today about one end of my work, and then obviously the other end of my work, which you guys are probably more familiar with, around that coach development and writing and all that sort of stuff. So everything is ongoing, but all is good.
Perfect. Well, that's a good intro to this episode because we had something else planned for today, which we're going to pick up probably the next one, which has been more of a chat about a topic with some other people on it as well. But because we had a couple of people message in to say they'd seen the article that you have on the Sky Sports that was out, I think, the back end of February, and they'd asked some questions around it. Slightly different questions that came to us, but I think we can put them together in a package. It was just seemed like a good opportunity to explore the article, what it's about, and actually delve a bit deeper into that. So the spotlight's going to be very much on you and talking about that world. And we won't go into too much straight away, but obviously there's only so much you can say and so much you can give. So I'll try and ask the questions in the best way possible, but feel free to push back if you need to. But does that sound okay as a starting point for us?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like a CIA guy, you know, the CIA guy that goes on to Stephen Bartlett or something like that. But no, it's not so covert, but all good. We'll do it.
We can always really edit. If you find you said something you shouldn't have said, we'll beep it out or something. So, but no, look, I think, well, look, the article, what you tell us if you don't mind then. So just a bit about how the article came about and what the article is about first, and we'll get into the details around it. So people, and what I'll do is I'll share the link in the show notes so people can find it. But just in case they haven't seen it, so a bit of background to that first, that's okay?
Yeah, so the article kind of zooms in on one part of my work these days, and if broadly you were to say my work involves coach development, that would be a broad stroke term for it. So this coach development, kind of one end of the spectrum where and you're familiar with this, Scott, where it's sort of mass access youth coaches coming onto webinars and programs and reading books and listening to presentations and that kind of stuff. If you imagine, that's quite a busy place with the number of coaches that are involved and that type of thing. At the other end of the spectrum is some one-to-one work I do with a couple of the elite guys. And that this is where the covert kind of thing comes in. So it's confidentiality, it's non-disclosure agreements and things like that to not to protect any kind of state secrets, but just to protect people's modesty, I guess, who I would work with. So it's kind of where I would say the role, it's with managers that you guys will know, probably be pretty well known globally. And it's kind of a cross between football, obviously, that the kind of football fluent stuff is kind of what I lean into, but it also it can be therapy, it can be PR, it can be education, stuff like that, whatever that kind of middle spot, you know, the Venn diagrams where they all meet in the middle.
Yeah,
it's somewhere in there depending on the particular coach and manager in the particular moment. So it involves supporting them through their job, and a lot of it leans on the fact that and this sounds, I think, quite bonkers to a lot of people, but football management is actually quite a lonely job. You kind of see the stardust day to day, but a lot of those managers, but not all, but a lot of them will find it difficult to confide in people. They've constantly got to have a mask on. You know, they're constantly, there's a camera in front of them every other day in emotional moments as well, where they've got to say the right things and do the right things and make the right decisions and the tactics and the substitutes. And, it's what I've become is I use the term on their shoulder. So I'm kind of around them all the time. So be it watching their media interviews or watching their performances or just picking up on some of the agreements we've made. And I support them through the job. Simple as that. Sometimes it can be really often. Usually when it's busy and stuff's going on, or usually be a little bit infrequent when that's not necessary. So yeah, that's my role with the elite guys. Yeah.
All right, fantastic. Well, obviously, for us who don't get to see that world, a peek behind the curtains, it's going to be very exciting for us. So, as much as you possibly can, we'll try and get an indication of some of the conversations that you have. How that how you go about those and how you deal probably with different personalities. So we'll try and get a feel for that. But fully appreciating the fact that given the role that you have and I guess the trust in that relationship, we don't want to breach any of that stuff. So the most important thing is to protect that. But we'll push as hard as we can to get as much as we can out of you at the same time. Okay. So I guess my first question is, and with the greatest respect, I know how great you are, but why would they come to you? I mean, I would always imagine, in a football club, you've got loads of support, and there's 1,001 departments covering lots of different things, and they've got their go-to people. Why reach out to Ray and say, hey, can you help me out?
No, and it's a fair question, and many don't. Many will have their circles, all sorted in that respect as well. I think the when you're in a position as a football manager, we kind of think of a football manager being in a club, responsible for the players below them, and responsible to, we'll say, the board of directors or whatever above them. What we don't always acknowledge is that kind of left and right of them as well is supporters, sponsors, their family, people they know, general people in public and stuff like that. So it's a really sort of isolating place. And I always use the example, A, because it's real, and B, because it kind of makes me laugh as well. I had a coach tell me that he can't go home and tell his wife that the centre back won't take it off the goalkeeper,
You can't do that. Oh, I didn't know we were allowed to do
But
that.
that's not a
Don't tell
problem.
my wife that.
When he said it, I thought, you're absolutely right, because, like, put it into its severest form, it is I don't know, training ground dissent, let's say, or a challenge to an authority. That's very, very a real difficult thing to manage when most managers would say you rely on that. You rely selling ideas to players, right? And making them work and them carrying through ideas that you have. Now, it's not always that top down. It's not always, I'll tell you what to do, which many people think. But there's certain pinch point moments. So when you have that altercation, and assuming we all kind of understand the type of manager that will want the centre back to take it from the goalkeeper more often than not, that's going to be probably a big part of why he's even in the job. So when he went first came to the chairman or the owner of the club, and they said, "Sell me a vision for your vision for this football club," it would have been about, well, we'll play a certain way and we'll do things a certain way, and et cetera, et cetera. So that's a big deal. That's a big moment. And it might only have been because the centre back was, I don't know, maybe he gave the ball away the time previous. Maybe he just didn't fancy it that day. He was in a bad mood or something like that. But those are the kind of things that you can't bring home. That was the joke that was made, but it broke down the barrier pretty quickly to go, yeah, I get it now. I get why you can't take that home. And you also get why maybe you can't take that around your staff either. Because again, they are, I don't know, I think the word subordinate is a bit out of date, but it's kind of they're still looking at you for strength and leadership and those kind of things. So using that as an example, where I've kind of positioned is that, well, I'm none of those people, and because no conversation goes beyond the two of us, a little bit like going to your doctor or a lawyer or whatever would be, tell me exactly how it is and we'll figure it out. That's the kind of approach to it. So if it is a tactical thing like that, maybe it's a I don't know, maybe they've just got a shed load of abuse over the weekend, or maybe they're just really under pressure, especially this time of year. You're heading into sort of 12, 10 games to go, whatever it is in leagues and promotions and relegations and the commitments they may have had with their chairman about where they finish in the league, all those kind of things are coming home to roost. So yeah, it tends to be wild and wonderful, but that's why they come to an outsider rather than often going to someone they know.
I guess it's just a nice, safe, neutral space, right? It's not linked in something they can probably feel a bit fresh. And I guess they know that, well, and for you, not being as close maybe to the club, and the people, it gives a freshness and a more of an independent view about stuff, I guess. And it's not that you'd be biased otherwise, but you can't be biased if you don't know. Ignorance can be bliss sometimes, right? And the less you know, the better sometimes, right? I guess in your position, it's like being a therapist, I guess, isn't it? You don't necessarily want to be too close to the details, but you want to get their perspective of things so you can support with your knowledge.
And you end up using them in many ways. They end up doing often a lot more of the talking, to be fair, because they're filling in the gaps to give you the context and that type of thing. So it's yeah, look, it's designed to be a safe space to do that and to throw ideas around and decompress. I found that word coming up a lot, where you can just sometimes you can just vent or you just share it. One of the things I found on the course of this journey is they talk about a problem half, don't they, when you share, but it's absolutely true. And just having somewhere to put it rather than, laying in bed at night or, chewing it all when you're going home in the car. It's just an escape route.
Well, and so how much then, and I guess it's going to differ from person to person. Well, that's one question itself, I guess. How do you, is it different or do you find it's very similar between, because I guess we're working in, similar spaces, but are the individuals make it different? And then second part to that would be, if it is different, how much the conversations are more technical, tactical stuff, and how much of it, I guess, is more of the psychological, social stuff, because I guess we'd all be interested to know, okay, what formations are they playing, and what's the next thing they're looking at doing, and how they're feeling that. But and my gut feeling is, and I could be completely wrong here, probably a lot of it is more about personality and relationships and that side. What's the reality there, or does it differ from person to person?
It does. That's the first thing we must talk about, because what I find actually most difficult, Scott, is when I have an initial kind of let's say exchange of message or emails or something with a coach. It's always kind of like the first question is normally just kind of send me your pamphlet, you know what I mean? Send me your brochure or whatever. And it's kind of like, oh, okay, so every month I get this, and this. And it's just not that. It's too. It needs to be more bespoke. It needs to be more personal, because as we know, every person is different, but every manager is different. You'd be really surprised, actually. I was really surprised one time when a manager came to me with an issue that you thought, my goodness, that's what you're good at. You know what I mean? And needed some guidance through that. So it's quite enlightening that way when you kind of drop your assumptions. But yeah, everyone is different, and kind of drawing up, the breadth of what you do, it goes all over the map. It really does. It can go into football, and not in a way that I'm telling you what to do, if that makes sense, because I'm the compared to their experience at their level, it's the football chat is very much on their side, but it might be just something they're not seeing, and it might be a discussion about, I don't know. Let's just be careful here about how something, in your formation might do, or maybe a big character in the dressing room needs to not play, or something like that. It becomes more embedded in that football stuff. I remember one particular guy making a note. When I mentioned, because I've worked in many, many different areas, as all around the world, and I mentioned something about family and him making a purposeful note of that when that wasn't even on the map at all. That wasn't even on the plan. So, yeah, it does. It goes all over the place. And football management is so short term. What's important today may not be quite as important next week. So you do end up all over.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Okay. And how have you found how open the people you support are, and again, it might depend on personalities again, but they might have a slight worry about obviously they're representing the clubs and what they can and can't share. And you know, it's all well and good, you know, trusting you, and if you know you, you know you can trust you. But I guess then it might be a new relationship, they're not new to you. So how have you found building trust with the people you support, and do you find that evolves more the more time you spend with them, that actually then things open up even more, or is it an open book from day one?
You've probably asked and answered in both those ways, really. So the first thing I do, like session one, I always remember this going back years and years. I did the generic tutor training with the FA, which they used to call it. It was kind of like the first thing you did as an FA tutor. So it didn't matter if you were doing coaching or safeguarding or youth modules or level one or level four, whatever, you did this kind of base training first. And one of the things they spoke about was, like, on day one, we're not going to get you to present today. We're not going to get you to expose your vulnerabilities today. We won't make you stand up in front of the room. We won't make you do anything today, but maybe tomorrow or the next day we will, because you get more comfortable with people. So using that idea as a basis, it's absolutely right what you say. It's like, how do we get there over a period of time, and then how do we start? So the very first thing, I was going to say, the very first thing I do is we have a video call like this, where it is just, I do what I call a three faces thing. The three faces are basically the face that you show outwardly, like the face you show the media, the face you show, I don't know, if you're getting on a plane and there's 250 people looking at you because everyone knows who you are. And chances are that plane is either leaving from or going to the city you're working in most of the time. Or whether it's out in the shopping center, in a bar, or any of that sort of stuff. So you have a certain outward face. Then you might have a different face when you're, you know, the doors are closed and you're at a, I don't know, a family wedding or a family barbecue or something like that, where it's, you know, the hard exterior, the mask, the armor can come off a little bit, but you still don't want to tell, I don't know, your brother-in-law who you're going to sign in the summer, or, you know, any of that sort of stuff. But then you've got the what I call the inner face, which is, right, what is it that you don't want to tell anyone? Like, what is it that you're going to struggle to get out of your mouth because it makes you quite vulnerable or whatever? So there's certain times that I would play that card, if that makes sense, you know. So if they are going through a really difficult time and you say, how are things, catch me up, and it's all, you know, football managers do go into the, yeah, everything's good, you know, it's, yeah, that bad thing happened, but you know, it's football and that's supposed to happen. And whereas, you know, okay, give me the real version of it now. What's actually happened? What's really going on? And it shortcuts, I found it shortcuts that trust process straight away. And sorry, and if that's quite a personal thing, the very first thing I do before we even get on that call is I'd pop an NDA. So even if we've not signed a contract or anything like that, I send it over, and it basically legally binds me from saying anything to anyone. So it really, hopefully, it doesn't put people at ease straight away, but it just breaks down that first barrier, and you can get into it straight away. So, but it's interesting. The whole psychology of it is great.
Yeah, I can imagine. And so maybe this is a good question to ask in the sense it takes the pressure for you breaking NDA agreements. Have you found any kind of consistent root cause of issues? So not necessarily like, you know, so the things that obviously these guys are working similar, you know, industries with similar challenges and opportunities, you know, does it come back to similar things? Are relationships in clubs often the challenge, or is it, you know, the constant evolution of the tactical game? Is it, you know, are there root causes there, or is it again too varied for that?
I think it is too varied for it now, and I'd love to put a bow on some of these questions. You know when people do, I don't know, a TED talk where they say that the five skills of whatever, gifted people or whatever it is, I've not been able to package anything yet. I don't feel, because I really just feel everyone's different, and I also think the fact that I start with that mindset is really quite helpful. You know, so I don't have any preconceptions. Maybe you can draw parallels, and what you find you end up doing is you go, well, actually, I saw a, I don't know, a presentation by this manager who talks about the same thing, and this is what they spoke about. Does that help? And sometimes just getting in amongst the conversation is more helpful than others. And different times of the season, I think every manager gets it at some point of the year as well, through some form or other. I think I would like to attribute the very first manager who came to me, and I didn't launch anything. He came to me simply with a blind spot, around youth players and kind of, I suppose, without saying too much, getting youth players into the team more effectively and things like that, and understanding that he felt like he just needed. And here's the thing: he couldn't go to his own academy manager, because he was supposed to know all this stuff, I guess, or that was the facade. So he came to me as a sort of a mentor in the background, and that kind of evolved, I would say. And probably most of the things I've been involved with have always evolved somehow, from one thing to the next, which obviously makes it interesting too.
Well, it's funny you say that because I wondered how much of this could be imposter syndrome. Because obviously you're working with people at the highest level of the game. A lot of our listeners won't be there. They'll be like me, just doing your best as a coach and a dad, and going and doing what you can with the teams that you've got. But I think whatever level you're at, you get those moments of imposter syndrome. You don't feel like you're good enough or it's right, and I guess we've all got that. And I wonder how much of that maybe comes out as conversations that people need, not necessarily reassurance, but is that a theme sometimes that comes up? Maybe you don't label it that way. Maybe it's not fair to say it that way. But if do you get a sense that something that's there, or are they past that? Are they just too good a level to have that as part of an
No,
issue?
I don't think they are, to be honest with you, because I think there's, I, do you know what? I think everyone's got imposter syndrome, and I think even if you want to call that, I think everyone listening to this conversation will remember the first time they stood in front of a group of players and opened their mouth to get them to do a warm up or whatever it might have been, or tell them who they are, and that's a difficult moment, and anyone would tell you. Like, you're coaching a long time, I'm coaching a long time. You go, look, there's 15 lads over there. They don't have a coach for some reason tonight. Just go and be that coach for an hour. You kind of tighten up, don't you? And you go, right, okay, this is because it's more complicated than just I've done this for a while. You have relationships, you have personalities, you have all that type of thing. So I would say maybe what they're very good at is they're very good at actioning things, even when they feel it in their stomach, you know what I mean? And maybe that's the fact that they go in front of the press every 3 days, for like genuinely, I admire. I had a real laugh with one of them one day because I was speaking to him and saying, "Look, I've been listening to you for the last 3 or 4 days, and you're just saying the same thing to a different station, but you'd never know." Does that make sense? Like, if I had to say the same key messages over and over to different people, it would waver off by the fourth time. By the fourth time, I might just, get the recording off them over there. But they do, and they have to do a pre-match and post-match, and be the face of the club, the answer to everything at the club. So if there's a boardroom problem, you have to answer it. I mean, why would a football manager have to answer a boardroom problem? Well, they're just in front of the camera. They have to answer a player problem, a supporter problem. Worldly problems sometimes. So it's yeah, they would be really good at biting the bullet, I guess, in those situations. And maybe the very fact that they can put kind of the suit of armor on and do all that time and time again is probably where it makes it really hard to drop that armor around people. So yeah.
And I want to come on to a bit about the media because I got a question for you about that, but just a side question to what you just said. Do you find are the managers that come to you in a similar stage of their careers? I'm thinking, are you getting the younger ones and more experienced ones again, or again, is it a real mixed bag? Because I wonder if there's a certain point where you kind of go into this world, and as a younger manager, you probably think I'm going to go and it'll be a weakness reaching out to somebody, and I need to do it myself. Maybe you have to get more experience to recognize that actually some additional support is a good thing. I don't know, or did the younger ones pick it up earlier?
There's no pattern. I honestly, and like it's maybe the one thing I've noticed along those lines would be that managers at the highest level are more willing to do it. They're more willing to send the email, make that call. They really are. Whereas the ones that are still working, professional, people and managers and stuff like that, and I don't know if that's where the imposter syndrome is really, because, if I'm managing in, I don't know, League One or something like that, then I have to be, to prove that I can go be a championship manager, I need to be seen to be robust. I need to be seen. You see this in grassroots coaches as well, don't you? You have to be seen to be a certain level, and I am comfortable in my own skin, and that sort of facade as well. Whereas I think the ones at the top level, they don't want to advertise. What the Jurgen Klopp always said, that he was good at some things, but bad at other things, and he got people around him to help him with what he's bad at. And that's just a great way of putting it. But he's so secure in his own skin that he can do that. So probably the top ones are quite happy to come to you and go, I need help with this, this, and this. I had one manager ask me to send him a reading list of some, we kind of crossed over into some ideas beyond football, that kind of are football, stuff like whatever, growth mindset and persuasion and those kind of psychological things, and dynamic systems. We ended up going down those sort of rabbit holes because they transfer, and I guess in a way I'm shortcutting some of that learning for them as well.
You mentioned a minute ago about kind of the media and the press, stuff like that. And I saw you put a post out about a friend of yours who would message every time a big manager hit the headlines. Remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I
Okay.
do.
Happy
I
to
do.
expand on that one for us?
Yeah, look, he's a really good mate of mine, to be fair. So once he found out that this is what I was doing, we all have that friend where everything's a joke, right? Like, it doesn't matter what the situation is, it's it'd be one of them. So what he started doing, and it just became a thing, was that every time a manager hit the headlines, I'd get a text saying, "You should message insert manager name here," kind of thing. And what started out as a bit of a joke, and the first few times it was surprising, but genuinely, we are now through every, I can't remember how many managers have been in the Premier League this year. Obviously 20 plus the ones that have changed, so I don't know exactly, 20 odd altogether. They've all been in that message, which is kind of, it's funny, but it's wild as well when you think about. So whether you're top of the league, whether you're bottom of the league, whether you're excelling yourself, whether you're in European places, whether you won a trophy last year, none of it matters in a particular moment, because you are getting hammered in some way, shape, or form, somehow, or hitting the headlines in some way. So it became quite a funny kind of vehicle, but quite stark as well. When you think of the managers, let's say, who would have picked up trophies last year, and the scrutiny they've been under this year, for example. So yeah, it became really apparent that at some point it's pinching for all of them.
Well, and is that part of the problem, right? Like that, and again, I'm always trying to. I know we're talking at a really high level because you're working at a very high level, but I don't know that it is much different when you go down to like grassroots. Do we just put this silly pressure on ourselves? Is it because it's all about opinions? Is it because actually we're quite critical? I'm trying to think of where all this kind of pressure comes from. Obviously, all jobs have pressure, right? Whatever you're doing for a living, but it's not about how much you earn. It's your job's your job, and you've got to deliver. But I'm just trying to work out why there is so much, kind of a lot of it, I would say, unnecessary kind of noise and criticism around things, but people want to criticize more than there is praise, right? You get a lot more kind of, and this is maybe I'm a bit biased here, but Arsenal taking a proper battering this season for being the set piece specialist, and the numbers don't support that. They don't support it. I think we're like a third or fourth, like in the sense of I think we get a third of our for Arsenal goals come from set pieces, two thirds come from non-set pieces, and the Leeds, I think, and Newcastle are better at it or something. There's some stats around it, and it's not a wrong narrative, but it's not like it shouldn't necessarily even be a story. But why do we want to pick things out? And that's just one example. We can think of plenty of others, I'm sure, from other clubs. But I'm just trying to work out what correlates football with negativity and criticism and bringing things down, or am I seeing it wrong?
I think you are, and I think we might have spoke about this a couple of weeks ago when we were together around the kind of the free for all, the free hit that we see in football, that you can go to a game. Yeah, we were speaking about that recently, where you can go to a game and kind of say and do as you please. And I don't know, it's, and I don't necessarily mean a literal screen, but I think when people see personalities that normally live behind the screen, so footballers, football managers, whatever, movie stars, anyone with a bit of presence, and they don't have to have had that presence for all that long a time. You know, you think of the hammering a reality TV star would get for whatever. It doesn't matter what, you know, name that show. You know, the really bad singers that go on, the X Factor or whatever it is that get put on telly. You know, they are free for all for all of us. And I don't know if it's just because we are that disconnected from them that it becomes okay. You know what I mean? It just becomes like a, that you don't, they shouldn't see or hear, or it will never penetrate them. And you know what? It does. And it does. And maybe that stretches down into grassroots, because I'm thinking of stuff that parents might have put in the group, criticizing your substitutions or something like that. And and I don't care what anyone says, it cuts. You know, it does cut, and it kind of makes you. You walk into training the following Tuesday night or whatever, and you are looking over your shoulder, and it's, you can imagine, like, if you think of a football manager, let's say they take the brunt on a Saturday evening for a defeat. They are into work the next day, most likely, with the players who didn't play, most likely. So the players who didn't play are always like, oh, yeah, I told you should have played me. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of, oh, great. I've got to see you guys today. And, you know, if you're, you know, it'd be very, very easy to feel those eyes on your back, even within your own environment as well. And, you know, it takes a lot of experience, to deal with it, and strategies maybe to deal with it over time. Yeah, but I guess there's also ones that we make it to that level, you know, they have a robustness about them that's, they not that it doesn't touch them, but just they carry it better.
So, have you found yourself in your conversations having to give kind of any tactical advice around specifics, whether it be kind of like, I don't know, ways of playing, patterns of play, formations, things like that? Like, I mean, do the conversations come part of this as well? And if so, how do you stop yourself from sharing those tactics across? Like, you know, because I mean, again, if manager X has a tactical problem, you think, well, you know, if you thought about this, and then you speak to manager B, and they might have a similar issue. Are you just open both times in those conversations, or do you find yourself, or does it not get into that kind of nuanced detail? Is it more like just kind of higher level stuff?
Oh, like you do talk about, I have spoken about the football stuff. It's probably, sometimes I feel maybe it is, they'll have had this conversation with the staff and probably with the leadership group, of players as well, if there's a big problem. So probably the idea is maybe more, you know, macro ones around philosophy and playing style and all those kind of things that come out before. There's a certain bunch of football managers now that are wedded to a certain playing idea. We've seen it so much in the Premier League over the last few years. Carlo Ancelotti, Eddie Jones did a webinar with us the other day where he quoted Carlo Ancelotti saying that you'll be sacked for what you're hired for. So if you are, and this is where I can't really name names as such, but if you, let's use Arsene Wenger, right? Because you're an Arsenal fan, and he's obviously retired and down the road a long time. So if I hire Arsene Wenger to manage my football team, then I'm hiring him for a reason. I would expect an output that reflects him and his style. I think we'd both imagine that. We'd go to the Invincibles and we'd go, that's how I want my team to play and set up and all that sort of stuff. But when it stops working, then it's the same reason they get fired from it, more than likely. So you play too much football, you don't play enough football, all that sort of idea. So it's, yeah, it's we do go into it, but it's with a larger lens, I would say, you know, and maybe it's talking about over a 10-game period or a season or whatever. Maybe their contract length might be, it would be as far as you go because it's so short term.
Just thinking, if we suddenly saw three or four teams suddenly having this new style they bring into their play, we can link it back to their conversations with you and work out which manager you're supporting. That the, if the Ray factor suddenly appears on the,
But I don't speak, I understand the gag, but I would say from it's not my job to shape how they play. It would be my job to go, have you thought about this?
yeah,
Have you thought
absolutely.
about that? So if it was a case of, I don't know whether to pick, I'm freestyling here. If it was, I want to pick him over him, or I want to sign this player and replace it with that player, it's kind of like, well, what's player A? What's he like in the changing room? Like, what's is one player better coming off the bench than you start? All that kind of stuff that might not, you kind of get into too many conversations in the pub, with that factor a lot over time.
So it's more about asking questions, getting thinking, that isn't necessarily always giving answers, right? It's just, have you thought about this? And that way, the solution or the answer they come to is still their own answer. It's not Ray's answer, but it's just making sure they've thought about all the options that they may have missed because they didn't thought about what they didn't know or what to think about.
And what football people tend to do, and we're so used to landing on the first answer. So he's going to play instead of him because of this. And that's really shallow when you think about
Yeah.
it, you know. So what we try to do is we ask questions and say we ask questions and probe more. Well, you know, what impact does that, if you have a better left back, or you think he's a better left back than the other guy is, what's the relationship like with centre back, the winger, the, you know, I mean, the pass that one left back plays forward early that this new left back doesn't. How does that change the dynamic of the team? And just going much, much deeper, than just those shallow kind of interventions that we get used to seeing with punditry and things like that.
Yeah, perfect. Well, do you think what you're doing now with these managers you're supporting, was that going on 20 years ago or even 10 years ago? Is this a new thing, and is it part of the evolution? Will it become a bigger thing moving forward, do you think? Are you ahead of the curve on this? Are you just is it just been going on the whole time? I'm trying to get a sense of how common this might be, you know, from where it was to what it might be in the future as well.
The LMA, the League Managers Association, this past autumn or whatever, winter when they met, had a segment on this. So getting that support from the outside, so it's not new. And if you go back to, I don't know if you saw the Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance,
Yeah, really good. Yep. Yeah.
Grover, who wrote the a different type of support, I guess. But now I think it's more acceptable. I think people are more willing, and maybe football managers are the last of its kind to kind of want to do it, but to be more vulnerable. Now, if you did go back 20 or 25 years ago and you said to the normal football manager, you know, give me a call if you're upset about something, you might get a sort of a long look off them, let's say. But it doesn't mean that they, you know, they left the game unscathed, sort of thing. And what's worth pointing out as well, Scott, is it's not all about problems either, you know. And it's sometimes having, when things are going well, you know, do you end up doing some different type of work? So maybe work that can go into the sort of the long term bucket, the self development bucket, you know. And maybe I need to be the first one to catch, you know, if you're 6 wins in a row, great. Well, what happens if you've got a big game Saturday? What happens if you lose that, and then you get a sending off the next game, and you only pick up a point, and suddenly you go 3 or 4 games without a win, and all of a sudden it looks different. Would it be worth your while talking to your players about that? Would it be worth your while talking to the board about that? So at your next board meeting, do you go, well, listen, just calm down, everyone, because you know, 6 wins in a row can turn into four without a win. But maybe that helps them look like a bit of a guru as much as the 6 wins. So really you're just looking out for their better interests, even when the football managers themselves, they get stuck in the real short term, you know, need to win Saturday, need to win Wednesday, attitude.
Okay. And as I understand it, an extension of this kind of mentoring, confident work with the one-to-one stuff you're doing is you've got this inner circle. Are you happy to talk about that a little bit and what that looks like and what's involved and how it maybe links in with this as well?
So if you imagine, the inner circle is we have a bunch of professional coaches that work all over the world, various different levels of the game. So you might have heard during COVID that a number of managers would get together on Zoom and they would chew the fat and they would vent and all that. It's basically a slightly more organized version of that. So there's anywhere between a dozen and 15 coaches monthly. We would get in those rooms and we would do stuff together. And over time, relationships develop and that evolves into a bit of a network, be it a support network, or just another football network. And we'd also have guests in. We'd have guests in that would speak to them about, often from the highest level of the game, or just like a niche sociologist or psychologist or something like that, that can come in and just offer, what I call a point of difference, right? So I'm a big believer that league teams finish where teams finish, pretty much, and it's normally down to wage budget. So within a couple of places, normally teams finish where they're supposed to finish. So what is it you're doing in that system if they're just going to finish where they are anyway? You'll either add to it or take away from it, as will loads of other things. Injuries, for example, might do that. So if you're playing 4-2-3-1 mid block and someone else is playing 4-2-3-1 mid block, then the team with the biggest wage budget finishes higher, right? If we're to, take football down to a really sort of poor level of analysis. So what is it you're doing? Why are you different? Why would a club hire you over the other guy? Why, will it be due to how you play? Is that why some managers are really welded to how they play at some great expense sometimes, according to everyone else? But do they know or do they perceive that if I'm this way and I'm known for being this way, that it will actually, again, be the reason why I'm hired somewhere else, because I am robust in my belief system and things like that. Anyway, so the inner circle, what we do is we do what I do one to one, but we do it as a group. So we would get together, we would learn and connect is the kind of buzz phrase. And that's been really cool as well, because it helps with networking and more people. So a slightly smaller version of what you'd know my work as, sort of 80 or 100 people in a coaching webinar kind of whittles down to 10 or 15 in our small group, and a little bit expanded for some of the webinars as well. But it's a little family, if you like, little family feel.
And that's monthly, and you'd have a theme around that, which is that the idea, kind of a topic or an area to discuss, or.
So we have two guests every month, and we would have two of those, we call them support meetings, but they're network meetings. They're whatever they need to be, so they can go to both or just pick one. And then we'd normally, and I don't want to become a prisoner of my own words if any of them are listening, but what I try to do is have a big name come in and present on something. So we've had some really, good high level coaches come in to do that. And then a niche expert, so a psychologist, or Thomas Grannemar came in and the throwing coach, and a real pinpoint thing, all in search of these points of difference, for coaches. So if you manage your substitutes better, is that a 1%? If you manage your throw-ins different, is that a 1%? If you manage your we had a neuroscientist in the other day. So if you manage the development of young players better, does that set you apart?
All marginal gains, right?
Correct. Yeah, correct. And some will land with some more than others, and that type of thing. But that's natural. So
And
yeah,
you've had some
that's.
good guests on. I know you've had Brendan Rodgers on there, right? You've already mentioned Eddie Jones, Rennie Mordenstein. You've had some these aren't B-listers, are they? You're getting some good people in there. So A, that's great. But also, I think part of the podcast, I know we're a bit pushed for time, so I want to make sure we get onto this. I always try and bring it back to my level purely selfishly. So thinking about the grassroots coaches out there, I'm trying to think what takeaways can we get from this. So I guess I've got two questions for you. One would be thinking about the initial conversation around kind of the confident role. And I guess maybe in the grassroots space, it's probably the mentorship role, but it may not be exactly that. I don't know how you see those different compared to what you do on your one-to-ones compared to like mentorship programs that we know from the FA and stuff that we've probably been part of. But how can grassroots coaches use some of those techniques that you've got going there, in their spaces? And then the second part, if that's okay, would be from the conversations you've had probably in a circle group that we haven't got the chance to see necessarily, is there anything there that you think, actually, what, this might be worth just mentioning to you guys out there doing the hard yards at the weekends as volunteers or working in in academy system, any takeaways for us, if that's okay.
Yeah, I would say so. It was Eddie Jones, and I'm not a rugby guy whatsoever, really, to be quite honest with you. But he was really open about A, his work, but B, his feelings. And he, I wouldn't like to get into an argument with Eddie Jones. I don't think I'd win, verbally or otherwise. He was so vulnerable. He spoke about criticism really affected him, and he hated it. And his words were, "I just had to pretend it didn't." And I thought that was really telling, and that was re ended up being really telling for the members of the group who really held on to that idea. Working in the pro game, where even at different levels of the pro game, you still had to have this mask. So even for grassroots coaches to kind of go, it's okay to be wrong, or it's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to not know everything. I mean, some of the top coaches in the world are coming in for a conversation around some things that a primary school teacher might know, offhand, like growth mindset or something like that, for example, and they're quite happy with their blind spots. No, they're quite happy to talk about them while still wanting to plug them. I would say that they want a breadth of knowledge about most things, and then I would say a depth of knowledge about some critical things, if that makes sense. So having blind spots, things like that—they're all okay, and it's okay to need support or a conversation. That might—I don't know. I always feel there's a stigma in youth football and even in grassroots football where, as soon as you become that coach of that underage team, you're responsible and you must know everything and you must have a solution to every problem. But if the top guys don't, you definitely won't. But that's okay, and if we could do that, that was one of the great things. And one of the other great things was like your organization. Some coaches have made it a long way in their career, it's not simply because they're organized, but having that as a bit of a cornerstone. The stories about Jose Mourinho, he would go to a job and he would have a 100-page presentation about the team and what he would do and all that sort of stuff, and just have that depth and detail. But just having your thoughts and your organization around your team and getting yourself organized probably helps you be better in a different way than you'd expect.
Yeah, perfect. Right, that's been fantastic. Thank you so much. It's great to have a little peek behind the curtain, and well done for not breaking any NDA agreements. That you did really well there. Look, we couldn't probe as deep as maybe we'd love to because that's part of what you do. But it's still fascinating to know this is what goes on. That actually all these people that for us are kind of way out there. They're human beings. They need support. They need to reach out to people and have honest conversations. And it's maybe something just, the same issues that we might be facing on a Saturday or Sunday are the same things at a high level that these guys are talking about when they come and chat to you. So it's great to hear. I mean, my final question, that's okay for the last minute or so, is just where's it all heading? Like, how do you see this unfolding? I'm sure it's organic with you because I think most things are, you just kind of go with it and make things good. Is there a plan behind this? Do you see it going on to something else, or is it, where's it leading to, do you think?
The next thing I want to do, and I'm going to run out of time soon, is I would love to take a manager through their World Cup this summer, right? So, of course, Thomas Tuchel listens to this show, doesn't he, every week or every
Absolutely, we've
two.
had letters from all
He's
the
telling
time,
us
but
all the time how much he loves it. So, I
big
know,
fan of the pod.
but, or, Carlo Ancelotti, I'm sure. But no, I would love to do that and listen. the pinch point in all of this is, one of my guys said it, one of my clients said it to me. He said it was just, something I had written actually just found its way under his nose at the right time, and for that reason, it's so dynamic. It is so organic, as well as you say. I'd love to do a World Cup thing. I'm probably running out of time to do that with someone by now, but that would be excellent. And then, yeah, just over time, as with you've already said it, with my coach development programs and stuff like that, is being able to respond to the needs of the community, so to speak, and just be relevant and significant in that way. And that will do me.
Awesome, Ray. Thank you so much. Well, I really appreciate that. We've nicked you for this one, but it's been a fascinating little insight into some of the stuff that you do, just a small part of what you do. We'll share the article, the interview as well in the show notes so people can find it nice and easy. And we'll be back on in a week or two. Probably, I think the next one's going to be playing with a guest or two to talk about a topic, but we'll share that. And then the one after that, we'll do another coach's voice one. We are getting some more emails in, which is great, but we'd love to get some more voice memos as well because it's nice to play those back. So if you've been listening to these episodes and you want to have, you've got a question or you've got something you want to talk about, just either drop us an email or better still, record a voice note, send it in to us and we'll play that and we'll chat through that as well. Probably the episode after next, I think, is the plan. If that sounds okay with you, Ray.
Sounds great. Sounds great, mate.
Brilliant, mate. Well, thanks so much. Have a great week and I'll catch up with you soon.
It was just got.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.